Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming to this session. My name is Robert Van Winkle. I work in the Microsoft IT organization, partnering with the Windows product team on deploying Windows internally. So I really like to start these sessions with this slide. There's a lot of information on here, but it really shows my involvement with the product team. We started in the Windows 7 timeframe, and I've been driving the program all the way up to the Windows 10 timeframe. And one of the key inflection points we found in this process is when we were doing the Windows 8 deployment. It was we're using clean install with data migration, and our biggest issue was Windows came to us and said it's time to go ahead and start piloting Windows 8.1. And we're still in the middle of a deployment. So we got together and looked at how could we do things differently to streamline and enable a quick and agile deployment. And that's where in-place upgrade came as a solution for the enterprise space. We did an experiment with Windows 8.1. It wasn't publicly available. It was to test that process out using portions of the consumer experience and then adding a few switch settings in there so we could enable that in our deployment. It was a huge success. And so that's how I'm similar to you. I have to go through these quick changes and quick deployments and have to go through a lot of the same things you do as you migrate your organization. The key win here is we were able to drive 50% reduction in our help desk calls by moving to an upgrade instead of a clean install. It was a user-initiated install where previously, when we did the broad deployments over an 8-month period, it was users were asked to go ahead and install, connecting to the WDS servers and other tools we created to make it easier for them, generally resulted in the user going to the help desk. What we've seen over time is we've continually been able to drive down help desk call volume for user-initiated installs. And at this point, you'll see in the graph, there's the Windows 8.1 update, which was more like a service pack being delivered out there. Now with Windows 10 anniversary update, we've been able to drive down help desk call volume below what we've seen in service packs. So that's been a big transition in how we're doing the deployment, getting users comfortable with doing the installs themselves, reducing help desk engagement, and a lot of that has been driven by having a real user focus on what's that upgrade experience like. So one of the key things that you're going to see is a transition going to Windows 10 is it's not going to be like your previous deployments. When you did your Windows XP to Windows 7 migration, you had to spend a lot of time and money in compatibility. You had to spend a lot of time and money in building a monolithic image that would go ahead and move all the users' data in place or off onto a server share. And you had to do tons of compatibility testing. With Windows 10, once you make that transition to Windows 10, you can do that through an upgrade where it's a user-driven event, and they're able to take control of when's the right time for them to do the deployment. And so it's quite a mind shift. And what we found through going through this process is we did all the heavy lifting in the Windows 8 and 8.1 timeframe to get ready for IE11 compatibility using the EMIE settings and the site list, and we have not had to mess around with those for the most part as we've gone through the different transitions for Windows 10. So one of the key pieces on how we've had to change how we do our deployments is we've really had to adopt an agile process in doing that. And so we're scaling from a small proof of concepts within IT, going to a community of users in a pilot, and then as we get the pilots to be at the level of quality we want those, we're driving those into the broad deployment. So proof of concepts within IT, it's generally, 10 to 50 users. When we do the pilots, we're targeting 1,000 to 5,000 users. In the broad deployment, we're going to all users within the enterprise space. So at Microsoft, since we have access to internal code, we're generally doing our POCs using internal self-host code, so we can get an early start on it because we're going to go and do the broad deployment in the consumer branch timeframe. And then we'll use Windows Insider builds to go flight those out to our pilot users so we can validate scenarios and experiences coming out in the new release. For you, you can do the same thing. So I'm not really doing it a lot different. It's just the time I pick up the different code sets that are available. But for you, you'd be able to leverage the Windows Insider program for doing your IT pilots, so you can validate that Windows, the next version coming out, is not breaking any of your apps and services, and then also start building out some of the new services as they're coming along in the features. And then use current branch for going and doing your broader validation internally. So you have a 4-month time frame generally between consumer branch and current branch for business being released, and then you can drive current branch for business as a broad adoption. So we've been talking about having to change our processes, and one thing I wanted to share with you is one of the ways we've changed our processes internally for driving our programs. This is nothing new, it's just we're using team services and we're doing a Kanban board to manage at a feature level what are the key things we're driving in each of the releases. And so you notice, and I think you can see it, yep, the first column is product innovation. These are new technologies coming in from the product teams. The second column is we go and develop shared goals internally with our other IT teams because we have to do this as a virtual project. I have teams across IT that are involved. Then we go into the planning phase, and then we do product validation, and then we'll run a retrospective. And one of the key things we do is we also have set up what are our customer promises. And that's the swim lanes that you see that we have created. So I'm always looking at modern deployment. How can I streamline that deployment process? How can I make it a really focused user experience to where I get reduction in help desk call volume, great feedback from NSAT surveys on the deployment process. And I've broken that out for me around modern deployment, modern management, access, and this is where I predominantly put a lot of the security initiatives, because this is where I get users access to the corporate network. We did always on VPN, and then we have a huge focus on user data, because that's a very important part of their experience. And then we run a lot of work around compatibility just to make sure all of our services are up and running and ready to go. This is what we do on a weekly basis to follow up with everybody. Are we on track? Is it green? Are the items maybe yellow? What are the issues that we need to drive out of that? And which ones are red? And by setting up the swim lanes in that, we're able to see, here's all the deployment ones. Let's say I'm done with the planning. We're moving into validation. I can just drag and drop that over into the next column. And then I can easily go in to the item and make changes on the status. And the way we've set this up is using tags, and we're able to track the items as they go through the process. So this is something that we found that's been really valuable in getting a program in place and then getting everybody working from a common Kanban board to see where items are at. And then on the features, our teams are working at the user story level, so they're doing a very similar exercise on their features with the Kanban board on user stories. So there's really three big keys to having successful adoption with Windows 10. The programs are coming very often. They're coming fast. You're going to be in deployment mode. You're going to want to get through those deployments fairly quickly. On the first slide, you saw that we're able to hit 95% of our adoption within 9 weeks, and that's users adopting Windows 10. And then we're able to go drive for 95% of all devices because we have more than one device for a lot of users within another 8-week time period. But critical to this is building that early adopters community. And at Microsoft, we call that our elite community. And we target about 25,000 users globally are in the elite community. We don't target 25,000 users for just the Windows program. We're allowing, we're putting that together so they can participate in other programs, such as Office. There's some other key programs out there, such as new products being released, LOB applications being released. So these users are the ones that are going to adopt early. They're going to provide good feedback to you. So you got to, you know, got a good listening system to understand, are there issues? What are the key issues? How do I need to resolve those? And they're going to help you do the scenario validation. And then the second key piece is getting user support the way they want it. Most users are not going to call the help desk. And so those little issues that are around the user experience or this doesn't work quite right, you're never going to find that out through the help desk, is what we found. And then generally when you do find it out through the help desk, it's fairly late in the program because you're having to go through your data there. So we're using social mechanisms such as Yammer. We created a service called Pointers, a moderated forum for doing that, and gives you that early detection system. And then critical for driving that adoption in such a short time frame is having a mission control call. And we do this every day as we're going through the broad deployments, and we'll do it 3 times a day so we can cover the globe and get feedback directly from help desk and key IT managers in the region so we have a real-time listening system to understand how the program's going. So we talked about that community, and there's been we've been doing that elite community through a website. And this year we created an application to streamline that process so we can advertise programs to that 25,000 user population and have them opt into it. We're using that for not only Windows, but we're using it for other applications that are being developed internally at Microsoft to make those available. We created this app. It's a universal application. We've also ported it over to be available on iOS and Android. And so my question for you is, how many of you would like to have something like this to streamline your processes around building a community? This is not something we developed for customers yet, so I've got a couple people. Okay, looks like there's a good appreciation of this. So this has helped us really gamify the adoption process. Users are able to get points for the programs they participate in. We try to make it into an elite experience, saying that you have to participate in so many programs a year. We haven't really had to cut anybody out, but it really has gotten people excited about using it. We get scenario validation information back through this tool, and we're able to provide that feedback to the product teams. The next piece we're looking at, and this isn't quite ready, we talked earlier about how I've been using forums and Yammer and other tools out there for collecting feedback from users. Well, there's a feature within Windows called the Feedback Hub. And there's some good features in that. It's newly developed. It keeps getting refined. And it has this great landing page where you can go in and see what's the latest information on the new build. It has a second page where users can provide feedback directly to the product group. So one of the things we're doing is we're working on how can we get a direct pipeline into that feedback for my company and be able to track what are the issues and then be able to work back with users to get solutions real time for them. And then there's also within the Feedback Hub requests. Now these are general consumer quests, but you know, I can imagine the day where I can maybe set quests up in here that are specific to my organization and maybe get those populated. So this is a transition we're looking at. It's not a product offering today. It's not a committed offering, but what I'd like to find out from you is this something that you would be interested in being able to have in your organization to streamline the user feedback with the feedback mechanism? So show of hands. Great. So I know all of you are probably really interested to hear about compatibility. So I'm going to share with you, we've taken quite a different approach for doing compatibility than most enterprise customers do. We do not test all the applications in our environment. So you see I have a line at the bottom. It shows about a population of applications in our environment. We generally have anywhere from 1,800 to 2,500 applications in our portfolio, and that's dependent upon the organizational structure of IT and then the transitions we go through the business cycle. But we only focus on testing the critical applications. We've been using that approach since we started in the Windows 7 timeframe, and we refined it further through each of the iterations, but we found that we're able to go through and test the critical applications. Those apps then show, here's how other LOB apps have been designed. So if I have an issue with one specific functionality or feature, I'm generally able to bring in those additional apps and make sure that they work correctly. So at Microsoft, we've been able to drive to, early on, a 97% success rate for all of our LOB apps by the time the product launches. And then we've been able to drive up into the Windows 10 November update. We finally hit 100%. All of our apps were ready to go. They were our critical apps. Now, what's key in this is we talked earlier about building this community, doing early POCs and doing pilots. The POCs and the pilots help us validate those other app, all those other applications that we're not going ahead and doing full testing on. And then having the mission control calls as we go and we do that broad deployment, if one of the apps that we didn't test has an issue, we're quickly able to get that information into the program, and we're quickly able to go engage the app team, do the remediation work that's needed to get it to be not of a problem, and enable users to do broad deployment. And then with that app, if it's a problem, we can also delay the deployment to the group that uses that app and that. So I'd like to get a show of hands of how many customers out there are taking an approach like this of only testing the critical applications instead of testing all the apps. Great. To further streamline this process and making it easy for our teams to do the testing is we created some application compatibility VMs. So we set a latest build up on the servers with the VMs. This allows the app team to come in, take over the VM, add their application, run through the test pass, and then move on, provide the results, and then at Microsoft, since we're doing early testing, we'll be testing some of the early builds. We're able to increment the VMs to a newer build, and so they can go do the validation on that. Is this something that most customers are doing today, or is this something you'd be interested in approaching? This brings us to the quality updates. One of the key things we've done differently is as the quality updates, we used to do a big test program on quality updates, testing it against our LOB app pool, doing the critical app test pass. What we found over time is we weren't finding issues going through those LOB app test passes. And so we quit doing that. And instead of doing an app test pass, we're using that pilot phase of about 20,000 users to validate that the quality update's not causing issues. Well, we found to date that this has not put us in a bad situation. We've not had app compatibility issues coming up as we've gone through this. And there is a safety valve. We can, for those 20,000 users, if there is an issue, we can have them roll back to the previous version of the OS, and so it's a very easy process, and they're up and running, and we can get them out of the update, and then we can go work on getting that issue resolved. However, what we found is that there's not quite enough information, and we need something that's giving us more real-time insight. And that's where we've been partnering with the Windows product team around Windows Upgrade Analytics. I know there's been a lot of information shared already at this convention about Windows Upgrade Analytics. What we're finding is that we can see what is the status of the apps and the compatibility, and then future features of this is going to provide us a view of, here was my compatibility before the quality update or the feature update. Here's my compatibility after I'm doing real-time deployments of the feature update. I can see exactly where those apps are at, how they're behaving. Is there an app that has an issue? So I would highly recommend getting involved with the Windows Upgrade Analytics and giving it a try. It's very easy to implement, and there's a URL at the bottom. This slide deck's available, so you can easily get to that. But this is an area we're looking at for really adopting quickly. It's great for understanding, here's the apps, here's the devices in my portfolio, which ones are ready to do the upgrade, an update to Windows 10 or the next release, and it's just proven to be a very valuable tool. So let's kind of shift gears and get back to that user-initiated feature updates. So this has been a significant focus for our team, and how do we do that? In the past, with an image-based deployment, generally that's going to result in a help desk call or a help desk-driven initiative. Or you're going to wait for a hardware refresh cycle to move to the next OS. With upgrade, you don't have to do that using OSD and other functionality out there. You're able to enable users to get the update when they want it, or just sit back and let their systems be updated through a mandatory deployment cycle. That's how we've been deploying and getting successful adoption. So you saw earlier in the first slide that I'm doing the deployment three different ways. So for this deployment of the anniversary update, we started out with a proof of concept around Woo for Business, because Woo for Business is gated by current branch for business, so it's really we couldn't go ahead and use the standard features of Woo for Business. We also did a config manager deployment using OSD, so we had a baseline, and then we're going to do a follow-up deployment using Windows Update for Business once current branch for business has been declared. So I'm not able to today, since I'm doing three different programs, deploy in that same time frame that I have in the past, but I'm doing the same adoption velocity and getting the same amount of users per week adopted with each of the programs. One of the key learnings with the Windows Update for Business is we leveraged delivery optimization to streamline and ensure that we had the updates, we minimized the impact of going to the internet, egress for the packages to come down, and what we found by turning delivery optimization on is we had over 76% of the packages being delivered from peer-to-peer networking. That was a huge, huge change. We expected to see something like 50%, and so we were just really surprised in seeing that content transition to that level. What's key with this functionality is the content is cached on people's devices after they've done the install for 24 hours, and it uses Windows Update. It uses all the same metadata in that, so it'll pull pieces from directly from Woo, and if there's local parts of that same package local, it'll pull from peers instead of going to Woo for the update. So this really provided a huge savings for us and pointed a direction of success of using Woo for Business for doing deployments. So I'm not sure how familiar you are with using SCCM OSD for doing these deployments, but what we've created is a way for users to do it directly from SCCM. They'll go to the software center. They find the app. They find the application for the update for Windows 10. They click on that. It sends a policy request to the manage point, and then the manage point pushes the content down from the distribution point to the local device, and then the OSD task sequence kicks off and runs on the local device, bringing the user up into the next version of the OS. It's very similar to what's the approach for users to do this. When we do the push package, it goes ahead and pushes the package down in the same process. So one of the keys to using OSD task sequence is don't go and boil the ocean and try to do everything in your OSD task sequence. We try to do very little in the OSD task sequence, and the primary reason is we want to leverage all the work that's been done in setup to streamline the upgrade experience for the user. So the upgrade through SEC through setup ensures that BitLocker is taken care of, Secure Boot's taken care of, all the user data is still there, all the user applications are there. So the more stuff I add into the OSD task sequence, the more I'm going to have to test for readiness. So by taking this approach, I'm able to use my existing OSD task sequence, add a new WIM in it for the next version of the OS, and I'm able to just reuse that task sequence. I'm able to get that time to go and create down to hours, where if you looked at creating a zero-touch image, you're looking at probably 3 months to 6 months to create a zero-touch image to get the same results. So the key things we do in the pre-task sequence that's different is we temporarily point the devices to Windows Update while we're going through the update process, because we use WSUS predominantly at Microsoft. And the reason we do that is so they can get the new dynamic updates that are coming out, because we're doing adoption early, so there's usually dynamic updates coming out on a weekly basis or even more often. So it's new drivers, new fixes at the CVB release timeframe. So it's really important for us to capture these and get those into the process. So that's the one thing we do that's kind of different than most enterprises, and I'd recommend you take a look at that. But if you're looking at your adoption around the current branch for business, you should be able to shouldn't have to worry as much about the dynamic updates, because those are cumulative. So at each of the releases of the updates, and our update velocity as we get to current branch for business is reduced dramatically, most of the setup issues should be taken care of, and most of the drivers should be stabilized by the time that we come to current branch for business. And then you'll notice that I don't do a whole lot of work on post-task sequences or on failure task sequences. I just let Windows take care of those. Now, where you might have to take some, take advantage of this is if you have other, if you're not using BitLocker, you're using third-party disk encryption, there's a way of, you used to have to use this for that, and now that's being integrated into the setup process. But let's say you're using a third-party antivirus solution that you needed before you do the deployment, you need to do some updates. You could do that in the pre-task sequence, and then if you needed to take action afterwards, you could roll it back to the previous version in the post-task sequence. So this slide is just really to highlight what is our architecture for being able to deploy Windows 10. So we use an SECM. We also have a hybrid Intune cloud infrastructure tied to that. And then we also have WSUS tied to that. We highly leverage our distribution points for delivering all of our content, even our WSUS content. So from WSUS, we're using that primarily as a targeting mechanism, and then we use SECM through the distribution points to deliver all the content. I think this is probably fairly similar to most enterprise customers. I'd like to see a show of hands. Is this your approach? So there's a few people out there using this approach. The other approach is to go ahead and have WSUS servers or other patching mechanisms as deployed as broadly as your distribution points. We chose to do it this way so we could have 5 WSUS servers and then leverage the hundreds of distribution points available out there. So this slide really is going to try to help point out to you how you need to set yourself up for success. There's some big changes in the industry, moving from x86 to x64, moving from BIOS, legacy BIOS, to UEFI, and then cross-language support. So I had to make these transitions, but I made those back in the Windows 8 timeframe. And so my recommendation to you now is to get ahead of that and to go ahead and set UEFI, UEFI BIOS, and also x64 as your standard configuration for new devices coming in. That's been available since the Windows 7 timeframe. It's not a hard transition, but if you start moving your environment now, it's going to set you up for success later on, because at today, the only way to really go and make that transition on existing deployed devices is to do a clean install with data migration. and that's probably going to result in a help desk call, especially if you're going from traditional BIOS to UEFI. It's not something that users are going to initiate on their own, because you're going to have to switch the BIOS mode as you go through the deployment process. And then on cross-language support, one of the key things you have to remember as you go through the upgrade process is that the native OS language that's on that was deployed on the device, not the user language, but the native OS language, for you to do an upgrade, you have to do matching. So at Microsoft, we support 5 languages with the native OS language, and then we provide language packs for the rest of those. So by doing that, I now have to have 5 packages to support those 5 native OS languages. And so one of the things we're doing to make a change is we're driving towards using English as the base OS language for all devices, and then using language packs on top of that. So I know I'm talking with a lot of customers, they're doing the same approach using that, and they found a lot of value and benefit out of taking that approach. So I would just like to show a hands of how many customers have a single OS language and then support lang packs. Great. So how many of you have big concerns about the BIOS to UEFI transition? Is that going to be a big blocker for you? And then have a lot of you already made that transition to the 64-bit, or is that also a transition that you need to make? Okay. So this slide really tries to land for you what we've talked about on the lessons that we've learned. It's a huge important piece around the user experience. You gotta have a better user experience for the users so they're not going to the help desk to do the updates. So some of the items we've been working with the product teams on getting is around OSD having a better user notification. So the user is aware of the deployment coming up, it's not a generic notification, and that they're able to see, okay, this is for the Windows update. It's going to take longer than just a few minutes to do the deployment. And the other key piece is that with OSD is to be able to pre-cache the deployment locally on the device so that it's ready to go and users are just going through the deployment. That's going to be coming in the January timeframe. The user notifications coming in the 1610 version that's coming out here shortly. And then with the WoofBe user experience, we've been working with the product team on the notifications experience there, because you have the consumer experience where it just comes down, it's going to deploy at any time. We generally focus on getting it out there to users, providing them some notifications on a regular cadence, and then providing a mandatory deployment. That's now available in the TH2 release, providing that variability. And then, you know, I highly recommend adopting the Agile processes, looking at doing POCs, doing pilots, and that before you do broad deployment. Iterate. Go ahead and build that package early on, and go ahead and test it, and use that for doing your deployment. And then build a culture to fail fast. It's really important to go learn lessons as you go through the iteration, because you're going to come back on the next iteration and say, I can improve that and I can fix that. So it's really important to be able to celebrate your failures. Don't look at them as failures, but what did you learn? And then hugely important is building that user community, because that's going to be your community that's going to help drive your adoption with all your other users, because they're going to be using it early on. They're going to help you figure out what are the issues and what you need to do to make it a better experience. And then they're going to be the voice in region and location, saying, hey guys, it's time to go ahead and adopt the next release. Compatibility, shift the focus from testing all the apps and all the applications to focus on your business critical applications. Leverage upgrade analytics, great new service out there that's gonna help you understand what your environment is like, what are the applications that you have in the environment. You can go ahead and customize that to where you can add your applications and the readiness of those. It's a great tool to start thinking about leveraging. And then one of the pieces we're looking at, is there a day where we can get out of not testing anymore? Probably, since I'm Microsoft, I'm not going to be able to do that, because I'm helping validate early on the OS as we go through those as we go through those early releases. And so that's really we're canary in the coal mine for the product group. Is the product continuing on in the right direction? But I can see a day where I can maybe even get down from 10% to maybe 5% of the apps and start using the tools like Upgrade Analytics to understand where is the compatibility of the applications before I start the deployment, and then where is it landing after I do the deployment, and be able to make adjustments and go do work back on that. And I think for you, this is probably a reality that maybe you can get out of testing as you go into Windows 10 and you go from release to release. And then let Windows Setup do all the hard work for you. It migrates the user data, it migrates the applications, the settings, it manages BitLocker, it manages Secure Boot, and there's been improvements in providing third-party disk encryption solutions. And then the key thing is it gracefully returns you to, returns the user on a failed install to a full functional OS of the one that they were running before with all their apps, all their data, and all their settings. So the risk level of doing an upgrade deployment is much less than what you've seen in the past with doing full clean installs with data migration. I know when I did full clean installs with data migration, we always had some issues with users losing data or a user doing something really interesting in their configuration and providing us with some issues. You know, if you're going in and creating the USMT technology, you know, settings to go ahead and do all the data migration, I had one user that did some encryption on some files and put the encryption keys in the local admin folder, in the local admin partition, instead of putting it in the user partition. And in the USMT we set up, we didn't migrate that. So we didn't have that data left over for them to be able to decrypt those files. We were able to recover it. But those are the things you have to do if you're owning that clean install with data migration. Since I've moved to Windows upgrade, I've not had to deal with that. I've not had any data losses. I've not had data recovery issues like I've had in the past. It creates Windows old, so all that data is still sitting there, and you can go recover if there's something that didn't migrate, and we haven't had to really use that broadly. And, you know, so we've covered, you know, Config Manager and OSD, let's set up, do all the heavy lifting. And then the piece we talked about pointing to Woo as you go through the dynamic update while it's doing the upgrade, that's really helped us out getting the setup fixes and any driver fixes that are out there. And then, you know, one of the key things we found is we're generally having to do deployments around around holidays. So one of the key things we've done is we expire deployments during the holidays, and then we'll, any of the major holidays, and then we'll restart those after the holidays, so we're not having a user coming back into the office on the first day and getting a mandatory deployment, getting Windows 10 installed on their device, and they're down for anywhere from 60 to 90 minutes. So at this point, I'd like to open this up for question and answer. I've given you a lot of insight on how we do deployments, and I'd like to hear from you.
Hi.
Hello. So,
thank you for this presentation. I had a question around Upgrade Analytics. I want to understand, how do you actually plug it into your environment? Does it actually take information from SCCM? Like, what's the starting point with this new tool?
So great question on Upgrade Analytics. How do you get that started? There's an update that you need to apply to your devices in your population, and then there's an organization ID that you need to apply to all your devices. And what that does is, with the organization ID, it's easy for all that information coming in to be collected and then shared back with you. And then that update that's available in the Windows Update catalog enables that communication back with that service and that. And then there's work going to be done to take the Upgrade Analytics data and make that available back into your SCCM infrastructure There's proof of concepts going on right now with that.
All right, and just a follow-up question on that. Once you install that agent, can you, like I saw there was a piece where it could tell you or give you information around web application compatibility. Does it actually go back in time and checks the history of the users, like the sites that they've visited and stuff like that, or is it from the moment you've installed it forward?
So it's basically once you set the service up, the data is coming in, and then you have that historical perspective of the data once you start the service.
Once you start.
And then there's data retained in the cloud so you can have access to that.
Got it. All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Hello. We are still in the pilot phase for Windows 10, and we've been experiencing some issues with that we have to do BIOS upgrade and driver upgrades prior to the Windows 10 upgrade. Is this something you've been facing in Microsoft as well? And do you have any information on how we maybe can solve that?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand your question.
So we've been seeing it during our pilot deployment that we needed to upgrade BIOS and drivers before doing the Windows 10 upgrade on devices. Else it would just fail, hard block. Is this something that you've been seeing in Microsoft as well, or do you have any information how we could potentially solve that?
Okay, that's a great question. So I used to have that problem with earlier versions of our deployments. As I've gotten to Windows 10, I've not had the issues where I have to go and update all the BIOSes on all the devices. And then with the Surface devices, since those firmware updates and that are included in Windows Update, I'm making sure that those are getting deployed through WSUS. And then at times I'm pointing those devices to Woo to ensure that I have those firmware and driver updates done before we go and do the broad deployment. But I have, I think, 3-4 other OEMs. I'm not having to go and update the BIOSes on those devices.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
We're doing a greenfield replacement of all of our PCs. We're using that as a basis to move to Windows 10. Did Microsoft, most of your presentation seemed to be mostly in-place upgrades. Did Microsoft ever have to deal with users who did not store data like VMs and whatnot in their local user profile? And how did you handle that? What tools did you use, perhaps?
So I'm sorry, I've got a bit of an echo, and so I'm having a hard time hearing the questions. It sounded like you were asking about how we had dealt with, instead of in-place upgrade, with data loss. Is that?
Yeah, did you have users in your environment that were storing data outside of their local user profile that you had to account for? And how did you handle that in the migration to Windows 10?
So, yes, we've had users not storing their data in their standard locations, letting setup do all the work. I've eliminated having to worry about that because it takes care of migrating all the pointers and the settings and all of that for all the user data from the previous version of the OS to the new version of the OS, where when I had to do the clean install and I had to do the USMT settings and all of that, that was always something that you had to watch out for. And so I know we spent lots of time fixing our clean install image in the USMT settings. So I'll just give you an example. We were hitting about 90% success with our image. After about 6 months worth of work, we added another year to get it up to where we're 98% success on a clean install image, doing all the data migration and all of that, and eliminating all the issues. At Microsoft, all of our users are local admins on the device, and they tend to do all kinds of stuff with their device after we do the image laydown on the device. So by moving to setup, I don't have to worry about all of that anymore and doing the in-place upgrade instead of doing the clean install. Does that help?
It does. Did you have any users where you had to do a full device replacement, and how did you handle that?
So users doing a full device replacement, I still have to use the old processes, backing up the data. What we're focusing on is moving to OneDrive for Business. So users are putting their data in OneDrive for Business, so I'm not having to do as much of a migration. And then we're also using SharePoint as a data repository and trying to get users to not focus on putting their device locally. It's a hard transition for some users, I'll just be honest. You know, we've got probably about half the company has adopted it as a preferred approach. We've had some other technologies such as IntelliMirror out there, but we're transitioning over to OneDrive for Business.
Perfect. Thank you.
I have a question about the user-initiated deployment. So you said you use the peer-to-peer caching and you pre-cache the content on the client before the deployment starts. When you initiate the deployment, when you make it available to all the clients, do you do it to the entire population at once, or do you, I mean, once it's reached the production stage, do you do the whole population at once, or do you stagger it? Any tools in front of that or anything?
So yeah, that's a great question. We do stagger it. So what we'll do is we'll build about 8 waves of deployments over eight weeks, and we'll target about 20,000 devices and users. Well, 20,000 users on Tuesdays and 20,000 users on Thursdays. And so it's a 2-week process. We'll send an email notification saying, "Here's the deployments coming to you. Do you have any reasons you need to opt out?" Because there are times when users may need to opt out. We have different groups that are in the middle of their development cycle, and they have a standard desktop that they're using for doing their dev cycles, so they may need to opt out. Or they're going on vacation and they want to be deployed later. So they have a week to do that in, and then they get the notification the next week, and it gives them 1 week to do the install before the mandatory, and then if they don't, and then the mandatory enforces the deployment at noon. We chose noon because we feel that that's when users are not going to be using their device, and they'll be able to go ahead and go to lunch. Hopefully the deployment completes by the time they're back from lunch. We aren't finding that all the time. It really depends on the hardware. It generally takes between 60 and 90 minutes. And we do have some outliers that take longer than that, but then we're working back with the product team to go mitigate that. So when I'm getting that 4-week deployment of 85% of adoption, that's because we've hit 85%, more than 85% of the users to get all of those devices, because we're doing 8 waves over a 4-week time frame. And then we watch the deployment ramp up to 95 over the 9 weeks.
All right, thank you.
Yep.
Hi, thank Hello. You for presentation. I would like to ask you about if you have some experience about third-party full disk encryption software or antivirus during in-place upgrades.
So I guess fortunately I don't, but unfortunately because I can't answer the question very well. So we've been using BitLocker internally at Microsoft since the product came out, and I do know that that's an area where we have customers that have problems with third-party disk encryption. And there's been some solutions created by the setup team. Originally, they created a scripted process, and then most recently, they've come out with a process to where you add the ENV drivers to the WIM, so when it goes through the upgrade process, it already knows about the encrypted drive, and you'll have the same experience we do with BitLocker is the goal. So there's work going into that to streamline that. But personally, I don't have experience, unfortunately.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. Any other questions? Thank you for coming to the session, and please provide an evaluation. Thank you.